I'm your host, Ari Shapiro, and this is it. Yes, I finally pulled it off. I'm not even sure how I did it. Some of it was luck. Some of it was due to injuries. Some of it was due to player aggression. But at the end of the day, I managed to get site experts from Jays Journal, the two prolific writers across the city on all things Blue Jays. I'm talking about Chris Henderson and Clayton Richey are here with me to talk about the Toronto Blue Jays in a roundtable format where we talk about the past, the present, and the future, and what it means for you as a committed, passionate fan for 2018 to set the kinds of expectations that are rooted in what we hope will be reality rather than rose-colored fantasy. So I'm not going to delay with a further contributed improvisational monologue. Instead, I will now turn our attention to the best that Jays Journal has to offer, Clayton Richey and Chris Henderson, here on the Jays Journal podcast. So after many, many repeated efforts to try to bring together my next two guests into a roundtable format that I'm pleased to say you, the listener, will especially enjoy this evening, I'm thrilled to have with me the site experts at Jays Journal. That's right, Chris Henderson, Clayton Richey, together at the same place at the same time on different phone lines and virtual environments, but here nonetheless on the Jays Journal podcast. Gentlemen, thank you for joining the show tonight.
Thanks for having us, Ari.
Pleasure to be here, my friend.
So here we are. This season is now officially like looking at the remains of the day. There is no more Blue Jays baseball in 2017. There's some fantastic playoff baseball that we're all enjoying, obviously, and I think we all have a sweet spot in our hearts for Houston for so many reasons that we can cover later. But for now, let's enjoy the fact that there is nothing but rampant speculation as to what will happen in the future. And I want to start by asking you both. We'll start with you on this one, Clay. What were your thoughts about this recent announcement that the Jays kind of surreptitiously cleaned house, fired, I think, 22, 23 people in their PR department, and seem to be reloading for the way that they're going to present, roll out the 2018 mandate when it comes to what this team will look like? What are your impressions of that, and where do you think it will lead them next?
Yeah, I didn't really see it coming, and it was sort of just something they did unexpectedly, but I don't know. There's rumblings of a fan fest coming. I seen a tweet the other day about that.
Mm.
So they obviously had some internal issues, and I think communication between a few people. So I think that kind of spearheaded the moves. But a lot of them were behind the scenes people, and it seemed from a few tweets from some of the reporters, a couple of them were really respected in their own work and. Like I said, I think it came to a shock to a lot of people. But, yeah, who knows? They haven't really come out and said anything about it after and what their plans are. And so I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens with it.
Chris, do you think there should be damage control in a season where the ball club finishes with 76 wins and doesn't make the postseason?
You know, it's funny. I wrote a little blurb about the people that were let go. And I've been meaning to do some more research and just to see, you know, with 23 being the number of people, I think is what it was. There's only a few names in particular that I really read up on. But I felt like something that the front office kind of wanted to sweep under the rug in a way. It felt like something that they didn't want to talk about too much. But, whenever the season goes this poorly, there has to be a scapegoat. And, the coaching staff is returning. The front office is returning. The roster, for the most part, is going to return. I mean, the guys like Jose Bautista and a few others will be gone. But, somebody, I guess, in some way had to take a fall. And the two that were interesting to me were there was the assistant trainer and the strength coach, and their names escaped me at the moment. But just some of the comments that Ross Atkins had made, at the end of the year presser, talking about, like you mentioned, Clay, the communication issues that were going on, and he kind of took a bit of the ownership for what went down with some of the injury issues this year as well. So it just makes you wonder, it makes me wonder if they just kind of wanted to build some of their own department and maybe get some new names in there. And I'm interested to see what kind of impact it does have because I don't know enough about it yet.
Well, I noticed, too, that Pula stayed, so their head trainer stayed. And, yeah. And I think Nikki, the one that came over from Duke, Stroman's strength and conditioning or rehab coach he had when he was rehabbing. So I think she stayed on
right.
as well. So, but yeah, it's like I said, they did. They just kind of swept it under the rug, and they haven't said too much about it from their end. So,
Do you think, Clay, that that a Brooke Jacoby or a Pete Walker should be on the hook for something when it comes to fans looking for coaching scapegoats? Because clearly they didn't touch the components of their managerial staff. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, you know what? I think I am. I mean, I'm a Gibby fan, and you know what? I actually really like Pete Walker, too, and the work he's done. I think it was just a case of, you know, too many injuries and some underachieving, and I think maybe the focus has to be more on the players than the coaches at this point.
And I agree with you, Clayton. I'm a Gibby fan as well, and I've always been a fan of what Pete Walker's done as well. I think the pitching staff has done a lot of great things, even if there was some disappointments this year. But, you know, going back to Brooke Jacoby, I'm surprised, not that I have any issue with him, but I'm surprised that there hasn't been more ownership put on him, you know, kind of for the all-or-nothing approach that the Blue Jays have employed for a number of years now. And nothing really changed drastically on that front in 2017. And the team was pretty, you know, the coaching staff was pretty open about how they didn't necessarily want to try and make slap singles hitters out of power hitters. So I'm surprised that there wasn't a change there. Not necessarily that I was looking for one or that I have a problem with Jacoby, but I figured if anyone was going to go, it would probably be somebody in the hitting or on the offensive side anyway.
Yeah, at the very least, at least learn how to go the other way when the shift's on. Like, bunt the other way or try and, if the shift is on, at least go the other way once in a while.
So let's talk about that, because this was, I mean, it's an understatement to say this was a dreadful year offensively. It was catastrophically bad on virtually every front. The team didn't do very well with runners in scoring position. The RISP was just in the bottom, maybe I think third worst in the American League. You didn't see a speed game, so there was very rarely any doubles or triples in a game by virtue of players not having the skill or ability to leg it out. And in terms of fundamentals, Clay, you know, you talk about going the opposite way. This was a year where everyone seemed to swing at the shoe tops and pray that things would work out, and repeatedly they wouldn't. Unless, of course, it was Ryan Goins with men on base. But aside from that, it was an absolute unmitigated disaster. How is that going to change next year, knowing that these players, for the most part, will be returning and are going to be a year older?
They've got to get younger and athletic. There's no... And you see it if you're watching the Houston playoff games. Like, they do everything the Jays don't do. The speed element and, you know, making those routine plays. But five triples. They have five triples in the entire season, like last in the majors. What was it, 53 bags? I think they were second last in stolen bases. They had 53 stolen bases. So you couple no triples with no running, and, yeah, you're handcuffing. You're looking for that big blast. And I think Pilar had 15. I think he led the team with 15 stolen bases. Like, there's just, you know, and maybe now Hernandez, if he gets a spot, he's athletic. He's got a little bit of speed. Now the strikeouts are going to be an issue probably, because he's almost striking out every third at bat. But I don't know. And I guess Atkins said they want to bring an impact pitcher and an impact position player. You got to figure that position player is going to be somebody that's athletic and that can do some damage on the bases.
Yeah, I would hope so. I mean, there's just, as we've watched over the last three seasons, even in the two playoff seasons, it was a case of really relying a lot on long ball. And in 2017, you saw guys regress. You know, the Jose Bautista played the entire season and, you know, it didn't even make 25 home runs. And it just, the power, you know, Tulowitzki couldn't get on the field, and Russell Martin didn't have the same stick this year. So, I mean, when you kind of have down years across the board, for the most part, obviously there are some exceptions, but it just doesn't work. And there needs to be a change of philosophy, at least some balance anyway.
So I'm hearing not one but two site experts extol the virtues of athleticism. Isn't that basically signaling every indication that Anthony Alford should be a focal point in making this team out of spring training?
Yeah, I was surprised he wasn't a September call-up, to be honest with you. And I know they had mentioned something. They didn't have enough playing time for everybody. But after his first showing at the major league level when he got hurt and he broke his hamate bone, but I'm surprised they didn't bring him back up and give him a look. But he definitely fits that mold. He's definitely that player that the lineup's lacking.
Yeah, I think he's exactly the kind of guy that you want. You know, I'm not sure that he's going to be the kind of guy. I agree with you. I was surprised that he didn't get a chance to play in September and kind of show what he was able to do. But I guess the Blue Jays were also protecting some playing time for Batista, which, you know, I suppose that's important as well. But I do think that Alfred is a guy that will be a big impact player for the Blue Jays, but I don't see that happening. You know, my prediction is that in 2019, Kevin Pillar is playing somewhere else and Anthony Alford is starting center fielder. But I don't know that it's going to happen until then. But that's just a prediction. Who knows?
I like it. Wow.
It's bold, isn't it? I think we'd love for young players and prospects to get the chance in 2018. But I think all three of us appreciate why Kevin Pillar will be here for at least another year. You look at his season, you look at what 2017 represented for him, just seemed like he was off to such a great start. Everything was going his way. He was very well going to become the Justin Smoke of what ultimately Justin Smoke represented for this year. Chris, once it went off the rails and he hit 194 between June and July, I think over a 60-day period, do you officially rule him out as someone who could be considered a legitimate starting center fielder, knowing that he's so inconsistent and aside from the plus D, which reached a new low even for him this year, does it make sense to continue with him even in 2018?
I think I have a little bit more optimistic view of him than a lot of people do. And I see a major league lineup. You know, if you have a guy who can still be an elite center fielder on the defensive side and be serviceable at the plate and hit ninth in the lineup, then I think there's a place for a guy like that. Now, how much longer Pillar is even going to be able to provide that? Well, it remains to be seen. You know, his route running was a little bit slower this year, or his time to the ball. You know, there was signs of regression, mostly in the speed department in the outfield, and that can be a result of running face first into brick walls. Like, that's, you know, that makes perfect sense. But, you know, if he can, you know, if his plateau is as a number nine hitter and as a plus defensive center fielder, then there's room for that. But his career is going to be pretty short unless he learns how to hit at a much better level than he is now. And, you know, I had an awful lot of faith in him coming into this season, but I'm starting to accept that maybe he's the fourth outfielder type, or the guy that's going to be going to be out of baseball in his mid to early 30s.
Well, and it's almost the tale of two seasons with him. Like, at the beginning of the year, you thought, okay, he's finally put it together. He's not chasing. He's not hit. And then the middle of the year, he's back to swinging at three pitches that weren't strikes and striking out and walking back to the dugout. And you're like, what happened? And then near the end, he sort of put it back together again. So I got a soft spot for him just because he's such a gamer. And like you said, Chris, he'll run through a brick wall and get up and fix his hat and he's ready to go. And there's no complaining. And he's just, you know, defensively, he's a joy to watch out there. And you got to respect the game he plays. But yeah, I don't know how someone can look so good and then look so bad in the next breath. It's got to be frustrating.
When you hit the nail on the head for me, it's all about chasing pitches. When he has patience at the plate, he's an asset. He's got some speed on the bases, and he's one of the few guys that can take the ball the other way. He was doing that very well in April. You know, when he was moved up to the top of the lineup, he was routinely slapping the ball through the right side of the infield, and it was exciting to see somebody do it. But like you said, you know, June and July rolled around, and suddenly he decided that he liked those outside sliders that were in the dirt. And it just gave me visions of my favorite player ever, Joe Carter, who would make me so happy and so crazy in the same day, swinging at that blowing away slider. And but that's Kevin Pillar's issue. And unless he finds a way to rectify that, then I don't think he's going to have a starting job for any more than a few more seasons. But you never know. There's been guys that have taken off in their late 20s or early 30s. In our organization, so maybe he puts it all together next year.
Well, and you got to figure if there's somebody who's going to bust his butt in the offseason and try to get better, it's probably him. So
that's
not going to be for a lack of trying.
And you know, to his credit, Chris, I also lived in and died through those hook swings of his trying to chase an outside low pitch. And if we have a chance to have Joe Carter on the show during the offseason, I'll of course bring that point up. He would miss them by about a foot and a half. And what always that's what essentially made it entertaining. Whereas Pillar, to his credit, has enough bat control that he fouls off really bad pitches. But I think that's what frustrates us collectively, the fact that he doesn't have the discipline. He's got the talent. He demonstrated in the minor leagues that he was, I think, a .315 career, .318 career minor league hitter. So the issue isn't that he has an inability to execute the fundamentals. It's just for whatever reason, there's no consistency there. And this year was essentially a nightmare in that regard for the inconsistency of players. And if we accept that the 2018 season begins with Kevin Pillar in center field, and we assume the return of Steve Pearce in left, because I have this feeling that Gibby and Shapkins have convinced themselves that if he's healthy, he's a better option for them in left field, which isn't the worst thing in the world. But then we aren't going to get more than one rookie in the outfield. So does that mean that a Hernandez or an Alfred might be, you know, left on the outside looking in, Chris?
You know, I think they both will to start the year. And it's obviously going to depend on what kind of acquisitions they can make in the offseason. You know, I've talked about this in some articles in the past little while, but there's no position to put a new player if everybody's healthy. I think the Blue Jays are going to shore up their depth in the middle infield and bring in somebody that's almost like a third starter type, or at least I hope they will. But if Devin Travis and Troy Tulowitzki are healthy, you've got your middle infield, you've got Donaldson and Smoke and Russell Martin in the infield, and if you have Pearson, Hernandez, and Morales, that leaves right field. So to me, I think I would be surprised if they relied on that one open spot for a rookie. Not because I don't think Hernandez is capable or Alfred is capable, but I think that at this point, I think they are going to chase somebody to bring into that position. Unless, of course, they make a trade, which I think is equally, if not more so, likely.
These names, as you roll them off, slow, zero athleticism. Even anticipating a healthy Troy Tulowitzki and a healthy Russell Martin is not infusing us with the kind of enthusiasm we look for. I think, Clay, it goes without saying, if this team doesn't find a way to get younger and more athletic, is there any reason in your mind to believe that we won't have a complete repeat, if not worsening, scenario for next year when it comes to a long 162-game season?
Yeah, and I don't think that they go into next year status quo. I really don't. And I know Atkins last year, his offseason wish list was athleticism and to get younger, and he couldn't do it. So I think after now not making the playoffs and sitting in the basement for, I guess, the entire year except the last day, I think now I think he's going to strike early. I think he's going to – he's got no choice. And whether it's you bring in an Eduardo Nunez to play second, I don't know who's a free agent. But and it's tough because you're stuck with Tulo, but between him and Travis, they played 116 games last year between the two of them. So – you know what? They're in a tough spot. Like you got to rely on them, but you can't rely on them. You're financially committed to Tulo.
Yeah.
But and Travis is a key part of that lineup, and they're such a much better team when he's on and he's healthy. And he looks like a seasoned vet at the plate. But now they're saying they can't guarantee he'll be healthy for his entire career. So it's got to be tough to plan. And then how do you bring in if you bring in a Nunez, now you're paying top dollar for a guy that, do you need him or we're not sure, we might need him. Like, it's got to be a tough situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where I think, you know, as much as it's, this offseason is going to be so interesting, especially because of that middle infield position. You know, Devin Travis, if you wanted to rectify the situation where you weren't going in with Tulowitzki and Travis, two question marks, can you trade Devin Travis right now and get anything back? I don't think so. I mean, he's an extremely talented player, but if I were a rival GM, I wouldn't be paying much for him. And Troy Tulowitzki's contract makes him virtually untradeable unless, of course, you want to eat a bunch of money. So you're right. You're stuck in a position where you have to roll with those two guys unless you want to eat a bunch of money. But if you want to be competitive, I think you have to bring somebody in. I think a guy like Jed Lowry, he's not an ideal solution shortstop, but I think he made like $4 million this year in Oakland, or maybe it was $6 million, somewhere in that range. And he's got an option for one more year with the A's. So, you know, if the A's decide to exercise that, he's the type of guy that is at least capable of starting. You know, with all due respect to Darwin Barney and Ryan Goins, we need somebody who can provide some sort of offensive threat, because we know that we're not going to have help from the middle infield for the entire year. We have to have somebody in there that can do it. And the kids aren't ready either.
Don't say Ryan Goins isn't coming back. You're going to start a riot.
Boy, he really went out of his way, didn't he, to enamor himself with the Toronto faithful. I mean, you know, 60, I think 60 plus RBI or 57 RBI, and 90% of them when it mattered. And sadly, it masked as you mentioned, Chris, the reality that these are not players that you want to see too much of. I mean, they're great as depth teammates, and they were very effective at the end of 2015 and in parts of 2016. But this year exposed the fact that what was really astonishing was how flat-footed the organization was in finding acceptable major league pieces to replace broken ones for a frustrated fan base. I mean, I've never seen a year with such a cavalcade of retreads and reclamation projects and controversy-riddled, smelly, odored players. You know, whether it was Montero, whether it was Ref Snyder, you know, whether it was the rotating, the dancing, what I call backup catchers, because there were about seven or eight of them. You know, whether it was having to dip into someone else's farm system into their, you know, single A level to get someone that was a major leaguer 6 years ago. Clay, what did it tell you that this team was so ill-prepared? Is that really on the organization, the current management, or is it maybe looking at the legacy that was created from the previous Anthopoulos regime?
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just desperation. And when you lose Sanchez for the year, you lose Tulo, you lose Travis, you got Liriano on the DL, you got Donaldson and Martin hurt at different times. Yeah, is it just desperation and you don't have those major league ready guys in Buffalo that you can look to? All your prospects are kind of a couple years away. But you're right, they definitely, they searched every nook and cranny trying to find, like, you know, Montero, let's bring him on. So what do you, I don't know. They've got to do something, and they're not, I don't envy them, I really don't. Like, they're in a tough spot, and whether or not they're going to do something big and make a huge trade. And
no, I was, it's funny you kind of bring this up, because I was looking at the Dodgers and their roster and everybody who played this year, and I think they're one of the only teams, if not the only team, that had more injuries than the Blue Jays this year. I could be way off base on that, but I seem to remember reading something about that on Twitter. But anyway, you know, you look at the guys that came up in their system and contributed, the young guys, and the Blue Jays just didn't have that, you know. And I think it's, you know, as far as being ill-prepared this year, I think it's a reflection of both front office groups. You know, obviously, Anthopoulos made some significant trades in 2015 that would have provided the team with some extra arms that would have been maybe capable of filling those spot starts, so we wouldn't have to turn to guys like Matt Latos and whatever else we threw out there at times. But, you know, in the same breath, I also think that, you know, going into a season with that kind of veteran roster, they were spoiled in the rotation in 2016 with the lack of injuries, and this year it was exposed with the lack of depth. It was almost as if they felt that they could get that again, and they clearly didn't. I mean, you know, you mentioned Liriano and Sanchez, and Jay Happ missed time, and Estrada was inconsistent, and Stroman was the only guy out of that big five that was supposed to be all great this year that actually did what he was supposed to or exceeded it. So that ruins things in a hurry.
As you're saying that, I'm watching Brennan Morrow dealing on the mound for the Dodgers right now.
Well, there you go.
He looks nasty.
Yeah.
He looks nasty.
I'm thinking of, like, guys like Chris Taylor, you know, like.
Yeah, who would have predicted him? Yeah.
And, you know, and the Cody Bellingers, who, yeah, he's a good prospect, but nobody expected that, you know. And meanwhile, we're bringing up whatever.
Casey Lawrence.
Yeah. Yeah. With all due respect, Casey. Hey, no, 40
you mentioned these players that when called upon that you need in moments like this. I mean, Clay, you rolled off all the injuries, and there were, I think, 25, 26 players on the DL this year. Record numbers, even though if we look deeper at the comparative numbers, there were other teams that also struggled. You know, Boston had a lot of injuries as well, but they managed to, you know, assuage them in a manner that allowed their fans to see that they were still competing, even when there was some concern, if you recall at the end of July, whether or not they would be a contending team as they struggled. The Blue Jays never even reached that point where we could ask ourselves, will they be a contending team? In fact, I think you both will agree that the media campaign was so convincing and persuasive that we had the whole city still thinking at the end of August that there was a shot at the wild card, when anyone who knew anything from just empirical observation, could see this team didn't have the propulsion it needed. It didn't have that that little extra je ne sais quoi that was going to get them over the hump and into the hearts and minds of the fans. Clay, at what point this year did you resign yourself to the fact that you didn't think this was going to happen and that we were in trouble in that respect when it came to an aging roster?
I don't know. I think I always had, like you said, you saw the inconsistencies and you seen the issues that we had, but they never strung off a winning streak. And it almost seemed like that, yeah, surely they had to jump five or six teams in the wild card race, but they were in within striking distance, and they never went on a 12 or 15 game run. Like, I don't know what their longest winning streak was, maybe five or six games, I'm guessing, but it's not very long. Yeah. So I think that was sort of my problem, is I knew they weren't good enough to get there, but neither were the teams that they had to jump. You knew the Baltimores weren't going to stick around and Tampa. And so you just sort of waited, like, okay, they're going to reel off 12 here. They're going to win 15 and we're going to get back into it. But yeah, they never did. And again, like you said, you look at the teams in the postseason right now that are still remaining, and you see a big difference between their lineups and what they can do compared to the, you know, the Jays waiting for the home run.
Yeah, 100%. And to me, they made me into almost, forgive the term, I was almost bipolar this year, because in April I had written them off and was angry and barely wanted to turn the TV on. And then May I was, you know, arguing with people if they were going to contend again. And just as you said, Clayton, you know, it was, I mean, the Minnesota Twins made the playoffs. I mean, it's to me, that was like the ray of hope the entire time. It was like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, there, you know, there was teams under 500 that were still in the second playoff position at times in the year. So there was always like just a kind of shaking my head and banging my head on the wall going, what? Like, we can't get to 500 and pass the Twins? I'm like, come on. Like, name 10 players on the Twins roster. Name 5 players on the Twins roster, yeah. The average person. You know, and meanwhile, our team of former All-Stars is sitting in last place all season. So there were times even in August where I told myself it was still possible. But, yeah, I don't know.
Well, when you got to write about a team every day, you need to be an eternal optimist, because it's going to be a long season writing articles about a team you you think is finished. So I think that was part of it, too.
That's a valid point.
and you both have written so much and have such an expanded perspective than the average fan, because of your ability to analyze what you see in front of your very own eyes. And early on, when it was clear that players began getting hurt, how frustrating was it, Chris, to see that those that were still battling in the fray were proceeding to have the absolute career worst output they've ever had? I mean, I think we had 4 or 5 position players with negative wars, which to me is an astonishing stat, because you at least have to figure that if you're healthy for 140 to 150 games, that you can produce enough to contribute, whether you're making $11 million or $20 million a year. When the triumvirate went down within similar time of each other, that being Donaldson, Tulowitzki, and Martin, did you just kind of stop and say to yourself, how are we supposed to recover from this? Where's the magical bullet that's going to fly in as a competent backup catcher or a capable second baseman or an effective shortstop? We didn't see that all year as fans, did we?
No, and you know what? I was one of the people that was a late believer in Justin Smoke and what he could do. And, you know, I remember watching games in late April and thinking, I'm waiting for Justin Smoke and Kevin Pillar to be the spark, or in May or in June, and I'm just kind of shaking my head going, what has happened? Here I'm getting excited when Justin Smoke's in the on-deck circle. You know, now my perspective's changed a little bit. I'm more of a believer now, but yeah, you're absolutely right. The guys that were hurt were significant, and the ones that remained, Batista had a horrific year. You know, he was healthy, so that was great. But, man, I mean, it was really tough to watch at times.
You said that with such a dry response. You know, yeah, he was healthy. There's no arguing. The one thing that we saw was that he was perfectly healthy.
He was healthy, so that was nice. He played 154 games or whatever it was.
Oh, my goodness. How do you set a franchise record for the lowest batting average to 4 years to considerable sample size that, for you, the legendary player is going to be on the level of excellence will go down in history as having the worst statistical season as a Blue Jay?
And the franchise record for most strikeouts.
Oh, boy, that's right. The good old 1-2. There you go.
Yeah. And you know what? I think I wrote something in the spring anointing Rowdy Tellez over Smoke and had about six options for Smoke that did not involve being a part of the Jays. So I'm as guilty as the next guy for Justin. So, but what can you do? And you know what? You look at Sanchez. I mean, how frustrating was that? It's, not only is he hurt, but it's something that seems so minor. And you think, okay, he's back now. We're going to get rolling. And then he's looking at his finger three innings in, and he's done again. Like, it's not an arm issue. It wasn't a shoulder issue. You're thinking, okay, it's just a blister, a couple weeks, and they'll have this cleared up. Like, and it just never did. And right there, like, what kind of hole did that leave our rotation?
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, Clay, if you were to tell me that before this season started, Francisco Liriano would be a colossal bust and be gone by May, and Estrada would be ineffective for about 2.5-3 months, have a 9 ERA in June, and Happ would be injured and miss a third of the season, and Sanchez would not be able to start consistently, could you argue that finishing with 76 wins is actually impressive in that regard? What an absolute disaster on the pitching front.
Well, and that's sort of my take on, you know, giving a mulligan to Gibby on the season. Because in, 2016, I think he used seven different starters. And I think last time I looked, we were at 14 this year. So, hey, just the tale of two seasons, right?
Yeah, in 2016, they used Liriano when he came over, and Dickey, of course, with the other guys. And then Drew Hutchinson made like two or three starts. And otherwise, it was those guys. So it was... Yeah, it was definitely a different year. I agree with you 100%. I mean, Gibby, you know, as much as you can criticize things throughout the year, I'm not sure what people can expect when you're missing that much time from significant rotation members. And Sanchez in particular, you know, you look, the Twins won 85 games. And you got to think that having Sanchez in the rotation for the entire course of the year adds an extra 5 or 6 wins. So now we're only a few games back. You know,
at least,
that changes the entire dynamic of the season. It really does. It puts you in a position where you're a buyer at the deadline instead, or your players are motivated and excited and believe rather than dragging themselves out to the field when they know the season's over.
Yeah, I agree with you. I like you said, it just between the underachieving and the injuries, I think you gotta just pack it away and hope they can make a few changes and get a little younger and go from there.
So. It would be easy for us to continue being negative or commiserating about all the things that didn't go well from the pitching staff, but there were some great stories. And, of course, the one that needs to be talked about when remembering the 2017 season was the performance of Marcus Stroman. I mean, I think you'll both agree. He was absolutely lights out. Everything you could ask for, 200 innings, a 6 WAR, clutch in all the big games. Probably would have finished close to 20, maybe 17, 18 wins if the bullpen didn't keep repeatedly blowing it, especially the middle relievers. And yet, somehow he only managed one team MVP vote when they took that poll after the last game a few weeks ago. I think 38 went to Justin Smoke, one went to Donaldson, and one went to Kendrys Morales, which I jokingly said was from his mom, because I'm not quite sure why anyone would vote for Kendrys, unless, of course, it was Kendrys. But in the case of Marcus...
He voted for himself.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm going to put aside my scorn and contempt for why that is. I think we all can sometimes read between the lines and know that there are certain players who are more popular than others. Obviously, Smokey had a great five months and maybe 1 week, because we all know the last 3 weeks that horrible Justin Smoke, the kind of bizarro one, like when Captain Kirk fought his bizarro twin. I don't know what that was. It was tough to watch. But watching Marcus was an absolute pleasure. Chris, what's your conclusion after watching that? Do you look at that and say, wow, good for you? In an arbitration year where you had to go and fight over $485,000 during the winter, you showed this organization that you are the real deal. You are this team's leader.
Yeah, I think he took a serious step forward. You know, obviously he's proved his worth. Entire spate of ways. You know, the biggest thing is that he put the injury stuff behind him. You know, 2015 he missed all but I think six starts, and the first half of 2016 he wasn't himself in the first half, and we saw a good Marcus Stroman in the second half of 2016, but we saw the real deal in 2017. And as good as I think Aaron Sanchez can be, I think Marcus Stroman is the kind of guy that you want to be leading your staff. You know, the kind of energetic guy that wants the ball every 5 days and then is going to go out there and give his best effort every single time. I know there's tons of guys out there that would fit that description, but he just has that sort of it quality that, that makes a star. And to me, I was surprised there wasn't more team MVP votes for him. But in the same breath, I think that's also a product of nobody expected Smoke to be anywhere near what he was. So sometimes you get some rose-colored glasses when people that perform like they weren't expected to.
And I think that's just it with the vote. I think people expected that performance from Stroman, where I think a lot of people, even on the team, are surprised at what Smokey did, especially after how bad he looked last season. But for Stroman, it started with the World Baseball Classic. He did it globally. Yeah. He put himself on a national stage.
Yeah.
And you got people in the States and everywhere else wearing Stroman jerseys. You see the kid pitch, you love him. The swagger, the confidence, he's a gamer. And it's exciting to think if you have a healthy Sanchez, those guys is your 1-2. And then, you know, if you have Happ and Estrada who are pitching like they can, now your rotation's back to looking pretty legit.
Well, and Stroman's the kind of guy that, you know, and I always love these players when they're on my team. I think back to Darcy Tucker, and I loved Darcy Tucker, but I'm a Leafs fan, and my friends hated him, and I understood it, and I know that my buddies that cheer for the Red Sox and the Yankees, they hate Marcus Stroman, and it's because their team, he performs well against their team, but there's plenty of people that do like him. But I just love that swagger, like you said, Clayton, that he brings to the ballpark. He believes in himself, and he's going to give 100%, 110% every time he gets the ball.
Well, and you watch him even in the dugout. He just seems, you know, he's a good teammate. You can tell he's horsing around. He's saddled up next to Batista. He just looks like a really good teammate, and he just brings it on the field with him. It's exciting to watch for sure.
I fear I'm going to have to call out Chris on the Darcy Tucker recollection, because as great as he was for the Maple Leafs, he was nowhere near the player that he was before they acquired him.
Oh no, 100%. I just love how he could get under
the Tampa Bay Lightning. Exactly. You remember with the Tampa Bay Lightning, he was not just an agitator, but he seemed to be evolving as a player. And sometimes when you come to a big market, some players become comfortable. Others use it as an opportunity, as a springboard to get better. Look at Josh Donaldson. Josh Donaldson played in Oakland. Nobody really paid attention. He quietly went about becoming, in the span of 2 years, an MVP caliber player. And finally, the trade to Toronto comes, and now he blossoms in full bloom. And of course, I've steered our conversation in this direction because this is going to be, I think, the number one concern for fans of the Blue Jays. And having, you know, both side experts here, I'm going to take full advantage. We're going to start with you on this one, start with Chris on this one when it comes to Josh Donaldson. Simply put, should the Blue Jays sign him or trade him and get resources? What do you think?
I would personally, sign him, and to make an hour-long description of why I think that's the case into a very short description. I think that given the pitchers that we've talked about and that kind of core that's already exists in Toronto and the exciting prospects that are coming down the pipeline, I feel like he's the kind of player that can help bridge that gap in Toronto. I don't feel like the team is going to give up on 2018. I feel like they're going to try and be competitive, and I feel like trading Donaldson is something that you would do if you were going to tear some things down, and I don't think they're going to. I feel like the bridge can at least be competitive with the existence of that second wild card until the next group comes along, which is why I believe that they should sign him.
Yeah, I agree. I want him to stick around. And I know you're going to get a couple bad years probably at the end of the deal, but he's the type of player that comes around once a decade. Again, you're talking about swagger and what he brings. and you've seen it the last second half, well, pretty much the entire second half of the season. Like, he can carry a team on his back. The numbers he can put up, when he's healthy, his defense is great, and he's got that same mold as Stroman, that run through a wall for his teammates, and like I said, he's got confidence. I don't think you let him go, and especially you lead the league in the American League in attendance, and you spent the entire year in the basement. So I don't know if that'll play into it, but the fans are here. The fans are coming out to the park. What do you show them if you ship Donaldson off and don't want to commit to him financially because of money? I don't know. I it's not my money. I'll donate an extra dollar a month on my Rogers bill if that's what it takes. I'm sure 4 million other people will too. So get it done. Get it done. Well, keep them around.
Well, that, yeah.
I appreciate your sentiment, because as someone who went on national radio in back-to-back weekends to extol that same virtue, that same perspective that you have as to why it's important to keep him, I've taken a beating from people who think that it's a betrayal in investing and building a team properly. And they use that classic argument, Clay, of looking across the street and seeing the Toronto Maple Leafs with all their young players evolving before our very own eyes while being competitive. And the question has become, why can't the Blue Jays develop a strategy? And we all know it's not easy to do that when you inherit another regime, an administration that was so unique for what it was during the Anthopoulos era, which was a willingness to deal resources to get primetime players. We know Shapiro shouldn't be characterized as the exact opposite, because he has demonstrated when he led the Cleveland Indians for a good stretch of the better part of the 2000s that he was always willing to make and sign the big player if it contributed to the long-term goal of winning. So you believe in that regard, fans should be thinking to themselves, investing in a 31-year-old Josh Donaldson is perhaps the only logical thing to do right now, knowing that there isn't a cavalry on the horizon.
Yeah, and I guess, your next guy is going to be Gladdy, right? And there's talk that Gladdy can maybe play a corner outfield position. But I think you cross that bridge, when 2019 comes along, you cross that bridge then. And whether you move Donaldson to a different position or whether Gladdy starts taking some reps in the outfield, if they do sign him, I think, anything can happen in the next 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And, one thing that you mentioned, Clay, that I think is important is that, with the next Donaldson contract, there's a good chance that whether he's in Toronto or he's somewhere else, that the last year or two, or hopefully not longer than that, but there's a good chance that you're going to be overpaying for an old player at some point in a contract like that. But I had a discussion with a couple friends over the weekend too about Russell Martin, and they were, talking about their frustrations with having to pay him so much right now. And I look at signing Russell Martin as a crucial turning point in this franchise, and I would do that over again 100 times out of 100 myself. And as much as having a guy that's having a tough time staying healthy now at the end of his contract, he's making a bunch of money. He was huge in getting the Blue Jays to the playoffs in 2015 and 16, and I also think he was absolutely instrumental in the development of some of these young pitchers like Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez and Roberto Osuna and others. And so I think when you have the right guy, and I think Donaldson is the right guy, and I think Russell Martin was the right guy, then I think you have to spend it. And knowing that you're going to have a time later on where you're like, this doesn't feel so good now, but it was worth it from what we got before.
I agree with you. I'm a huge Martin supporter, and I'm with you. I would do it again in a heartbeat. And like you said, he brings so much stuff that you can't put a statistical value to, the stuff he brings to the pitching staff and the leadership qualities. And yeah, I agree with you. He was instrumental, and I think he still will be instrumental. But I'd do it again as well, 100 times out of 100.
Well, this was a tough year to be a sports writer who follows this team. And both of you as site experts obviously have a unique perspective, because it wasn't only articles that you were offering for our listeners and fans and followers of the website to appreciate, but there was also the writing team that we had. And this was a tough year for them to cover the team. Let's face it, it was a heck of a lot more interesting at the second half of 2015 and through various 2016. Even though if you think back, 2016 was an incredibly uneven season. I mean, it came to the last game to see if you could get the second wild card spot. Let's not romanticize what 2016 was. So really, Chris, could you make the argument that aside from that magical month of September, have fans really gotten ahead of themselves in the expectations of this team, knowing its limitations now?
They could very well, you know, and I often find myself wondering how rose-colored my glasses are with this team, because, you know, as Clayton mentioned early on, when you're writing about a team pretty much every day, it gets very defeating very quickly to start saying negative things on a daily basis, and you start feeling crappy about yourself and your own life. And so it is fun, or it's easier and on the soul and on the mind to look for the bright spots in the organization. So I often wonder if I'm seeing more in these guys than the rest of the baseball world does. But I know that being in Toronto, you know, in the Canadian market, we have players that don't get the recognition that they should. You know, you mentioned earlier on how Marcus Stroman on the world stage was performing for Team USA. And I think that was phenomenal for his career arc for a number of ways. You know, and then obviously following up with the performance he did this year was huge as well. But I don't know. It depends on who you talk to as far as what they believe as far for the future with this team. You know, I talk to some people and they think that they'll, no problem, they're going to be in the mix next year, and then the other half again, kind of like the Ryan Cohen situation. The other half is going, oh, they're going to be worse. So I don't know. I tend to be an optimist. I think that we can, at the worst, we should be able to compete for the second wild card next year.
Yeah, I think so too. Again, you gotta look at the injuries. If we're healthy and you make a few changes, you insert a little bit of speed in the lineup. Can we give up on Biagini as a starter and just throw him back in the bullpen and maybe sign another arm?
Mm.
I'm
for that.
I'd like to see. Yeah, I'd like to give up on I don't know what it is. His ERA was on his starts. I think he was 5.7 something in games that he started, and back to 4 something when he relieved. So I don't know. He didn't show me much. And I like our rotation. If you add another pitcher, or you add another free agent pitcher with a healthy Sanchez and Stroman, and if Estrada can rebound like he sort of did at the end of the year, I like our chances. Again, it's going to come down to health. I think that's what we can't be using 14 pitchers, 14 different starting pitchers in a season.
No.
But I'll tell you, I'll put you on the spot yet again. Why don't you give me why don't you give me Clayton's list of the top three pitchers and the top three position players that you'd like to see called up as reinforcements? Give me the three players you'd like to see on both sides make an appearance next year to at least give you reason to think that there's a chance to see nice, young, fresh, athletic players showing up on that field instead of reclamation projects and aging, regressive personnel.
Arms, there's not, I mean, other guests than Ryan Borecki, Reed Foley and Connor Green sort of took a step back.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of this Nate Pearson they just got, but he's going to be a few years away, but he was dominant. He was dominant with Vancouver, and I think he's someone who could shoot through the ranks fairly quick, but it definitely won't be this year. Position wise, I think obviously we've got Hernandez and Alford. I think it's 2019 before we see the dynamic duo. As much as everybody wants to see them, I think they're going to take their time with them. Danny Jansen, I think, probably starts in AAA. He's only got, I think, 20 games or 20-something games in AAA. So I figure they'll start him in AAA and they'll sign a new backup.
Mm-hmm.
But those are some exciting. And again, Dalton Pompey, where does he fit in the picture? He's sort of that forgotten.
The missing link, yeah.
But everything you look for is kind of what Pompey is, right? He's athletic. He's got speed.
Chris, I'm wondering if these reinforcements don't prove to be effective, and I hate to say it, but the way you talked about this pitcher's clay didn't exactly loan any enthusiasm to the argument, because we know it's really lean on the pitching side. Yeah, some positional players will show up, but if something happens, Estrada, Hap, more injuries, a little player regression, it could be a disaster. Chris, if the reinforcements don't show up and get the job done, will the fans respond, in your opinion, in terms of whether they show up to the park, whether they subscribe to the services, or will the front office take advantage of them again and basically then halfway through the year argue, hey, don't worry, We didn't exactly expect very much, but get ready for 2019 for the dynamic duo.
I think it's a dangerous game for the front office right now. You know, we've talked about it several times throughout the year on this podcast, with the Raptors being as competitive as they have been, with Maple Leafs surging and being one of the most talked about teams in the NHL. Front office, if they want the fans to buy in and continue to support the team the way that they have for the last 3 years, like, it was mind-blowing that they led the American League in attendance and that they were in last place until the last day of the season. That just blows my mind. And that's not going to happen again if they're in last place, you know? I just think the fan base will check out halfway through the year if this team isn't competitive. And that's something that it takes a long time to get that, to get the fan base to come out. I mean, think about the 2000s and the early part of this decade and the numbers that we saw at the Rogers Center. It wasn't pretty at times. And it's not going to just take, oh, hey, well, guess what? Vladimir Guerrero's here now. Well, yeah, that's great. Until the team starts competing, they don't care if there's a star player. Carlos Delgado played to a lot of empty stadiums throughout the course of his career. Roy Halladay pitched a lot of games to half-empty Rogers Center.
Although the beer lineups were a lot shorter then.
Yeah.
Plus, you could get away with a lot more back then, right? When it came to being rowdy in the stands. Now, it's a very different atmosphere, different environment. It's catered towards young millennial fans. And the thing with young millennial fans is they don't have as long a memory to appreciate when an organization is, quote, pulling a fast one. Does that worry you, Clay, that this product, which is so near and dear to so many fans' hearts and is something that we're inspired by because of our love and passion for baseball, do you see this organization as thinking it might get a little bit too clever for its own good? And then, as Chris mentioned, when people start showing up and knowing that there will be complete and utter uncertainty in 2019, because let's face it, there's never a sure thing, even with the lead prospect. Some of them struggle. Delgado got sent down. Roy Halladay had to rebuild his whole approach to pitching before he became the best pitcher in the game. Are you concerned that this organization really drops the ball and then we find ourselves going through yet another long stretch of no playoff baseball?
I think they realize. But again, I'm with Chris. At the beginning of the year, I would have never bet that we'd lead the league in attendance, or the American League in attendance, where we were in the basement. Like, I would have thought the bandwagon fans would have jumped off midway through, and you know, we'd be back to 18,000 in the dome with the way they played. But you know what? They should be proud. They stuck with them, and obviously that shows that they've got a love for the game, and they're not just going to be fair weather fans. They're going to show up and they're going to cheer. And there are a lot of likable players on this team, like the Josh Hamiltons, the Stromans, the Russell Martins. Years past, there was, you know, you look down the lineup and you might pick one guy that you kind of like, yeah, I really took a liking here, I'd like to wear his jersey. But like here, you know, the Pilars, there's more than a handful, you know, the Osunas, the Sanchezes. So I think that's part of it. But I know they're in a tough spot, but they got to keep trudging on. There's too many young guys on this team to tear it down. Like, the key pieces are in place, the Stromans, the Sanchez, Osuna. So I think they see that. I think the fans coming out was a positive, and hopefully they reciprocated and they invest in guys like Donaldson, and they bring that impact position player and that impact pitcher that Atkins said is on the to-do list.
Yeah, I think they have to invest in next year, you know, because let's paint a worst-case scenario picture. Let's say they come out and they do nothing this offseason, they come back with the same team, same results. Well, Josh Donaldson's either getting traded or he's going elsewhere after the season. 2019 rolls around, Jay Happ and Marco Estrada are gone. You know, if Sanchez can't get healthy, now you're left with one realistic major league arm and Troy Tulowitzki and Russell Martin getting paid $20 million at the end of their careers and what's left.
Jeez.
So I mean, you have to bridge that gap, or you are seriously setting yourself up for a couple of quiet years, I think, anyway.
Well, and just by the tone of your voice, it's again not leaving me with a great sense of confidence when it comes to the ravages of time, the way the game is played. A lot of these players just flat out looked old when they were playing healthy, and then when they were injured and it took a long time to recover, and given the kind of weird, strange occurrences that happen throughout the course of this regular season, I think fans appreciate that this is a write-off. Fine, this didn't go as planned, but I don't think they'll appreciate if there is a repetition in 2018. And it won't be the same. We know that baseball evens itself out. We knew that in 2016, with everyone being healthy on the starting staff, we were due for a year where everybody was basically broken. Hopefully, if they're somewhere in the middle and have some kind of depth and a plan in place to give fans a reason to show up to see competitive baseball, then we won't have a mutiny on our hands that could lead to all sorts of fan frustration and problems when it comes to appreciating what baseball in Toronto is really all about. Gentlemen, this round table has been absolutely brilliant and fantastic. I know I always say that about all the round tables I've had this year, but since you represent what I like to call the first ever site expert edition of the show, you know, this is like an international moment. We're going to keep doing this, obviously. I'm going to start with you, Chris. Talk about what you've been working on, how listeners of the show can follow you during the off season. And knowing that you will be on the show very soon, maybe talk about what you've got on the horizon.
Yeah, that's, you know, I'm just as you asked me that, I feel like I'm Claver a minute ago. Wait a minute, what have I been writing lately? you know, we started a year review series at jaysjournal.com. You can find my work there, Clayton's work there, and we've got a great stable of writers that contribute on a daily and weekly basis. You know what? I'm not even. I have a few ideas sketched out that I have to finish up tonight, but I haven't even decided exactly what I'm going to finish up tonight. So I won't even tell you what I'm working on in the immediate term. But you can follow me on Twitter at Baseball4Brains and at Baseball4Brains. And we're going to be staying very active throughout the off season. There's always lots to talk about, and in a year that so many things went wrong like it did this year, there's should be plenty of change and lots of speculation. So keep coming back to the website, and we'll keep you entertained.
The same thing kind of with Chris. We're doing the year in review for the players. Hopefully we're going to do everybody on the roster before it's all said and done. I'm working on a piece tonight. I don't know if you guys heard, Daniel Webb died in a tragic ATV accident last night. He was a Jays farm man. He was drafted by the Jays, and then he ended up going to Chicago in the Jason Fraser deal. And he pitched, I think, parts of four seasons with Chicago. But so I'm gonna have something that'll air tomorrow morning about him as a Blue Jay and his unfortunate death. Other than that, that's about it as far as the articles on the go. I can be reached on Twitter at Clayton Riche, and as Chris said, we got a lot planned for the off season, hopefully, and we're going to keep putting out quality content, and hopefully the readers will keep coming back.
I have no doubt. And again, you've been listening to Site Experts at jaysjournal.com. Chris Henderson, Clayton Riche, you can find their excellent work online, and we've got many, many more articles coming down the pipe during the offseason, and of course, many, many more episodes of the Jays Journal podcast, where you can find both of these brilliant gentlemen talking about what they enjoy most in life, which is the sport of baseball and their beloved Toronto Blue Jays. Gentlemen, have a wonderful evening, and thanks for joining the podcast.
Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, guys.